Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So today we're on text 35 on page 69, and we're at the end of the chapter, so the text 36 has no purport, so we'll read them both. So on page 69, text 35. Ahuto, 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 Bhagavan, Ragya, ahuto, Bhagavan, Ragya, Yajayitva, Dvijayar, Nripam, Yajayitva Dvijayar Nripam, Uvasa Katichin Masan, Uvasa Katichin Masan, Suhridang Priyakamyaya, Suhridang Priyakamyaya, Ahuto Bhagavan Ragnya, Yajayitvad Vijayar Nripam, Uvasa Katichin Masan, Uvasa Katichin Masan, Suhridang Priyakamyaya, Ahuto Bhagavan Ragnya, Yajayitvad Vijayar Nripam, Uvasa Katichin Masan, Suhridang Priyakamyaya, Ahuto Bhagavan Ragnya, Yajayitvad Vijayan Ripam, Uvasa Katichin Masan, Suhridang Priyakamyaya.
Ahuto Bhagavan Rajna,
Ahuto Bhagavan Rajna,
Rajayitva Dvijayan Rupam,
Yajayitva Dvijayan Rupam, Uvasa Katichin Masan,
Suhridam Priyakamyaya,
Suhridam Priyakamyaya.
Ahuto Bhagavan Rajna,
Ahuto Bhagavan Ragya,
Yajayitva Dvijayar Nripam,
Yajayitva Dvijayar Nripam,
Uvasa Katichin Masan,
Uvasa Katichin Masan,
Suhridam Priyakamyaya,
Suhridam Priyakamyaya.
Ahuto Bhagavan Ragya,
Ahuto Bhagavan Ragya,
Yajayitva Dvijayar Nripam,
Yajayitva Dvijayar Nripam,
Uvasa Katichin Masan,
Uvasa Katichin Masan,
Suhridam Priyakamyaya,
Suhridam Priyakamyaya. Would you like to try?
Ahuto Bhagavan Ragya,
Ahuto Bhagavan Ragya,
Yajayitva Dvijayar Nripam,
Yajayitva Dvijayar Nripam,
Uvasa Katichin Masan,
Uvasa Katichin Masan,
Suhridam Priyakamyaya,
Suhridam Priyakamyaya. Perfect. Ahutaha, being called by Bhagavan, Lord Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. Ragya, by the King. Yajayitva, causing to be performed. Dvijahi, by the learned Brahmanas. Nripam, on behalf of the King. Uvasa, resided. Katichit, a few. Masan, months. Suhridam, for the sake of the relatives. Priyakamyaya, for the pleasure. Translation: Lord Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead, being invited to the sacrifices by Maharaj Yudhishthir, saw to it that they were performed by qualified twice-born brahmanas. After that, for the pleasure of the relatives, the Lord remained a few months. Please repeat. Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, being invited to the sacrifices by Maharaj Yudhishthir, saw to it that they were performed by qualified twice-born brahmanas. After that, for the pleasure of the relatives, the Lord remained a few months. Haribol Pallav, we're on 69. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Lord Sri Krishna was invited by Maharaj Yudhishthir to look into the supervision of the performance of yajna, and the Lord, to abide by the orders of His elderly cousin, caused the performance of yajnas by learned twice-born brahmanas. Simply taking birth in the family of a brahmana does not make one qualified to perform yajnas. One must be twice-born by proper training and initiation from the bona fide acharya. The once-born scions of brahmana families are equal with the once-born shudras, and such brahma-bandhus, or unqualified once-born scions, must be rejected for any purpose of religious or Vedic function. Lord Sri Krishna was entrusted to look after this arrangement, and perfect as He is, He caused the yajnas to be performed by the bona fide twice-born brahmanas for successful execution. And because it's the end of the chapter, we'll read the next verse. Tato rajya bhyanujya bhyanujyataha Krishnaya sahabandhubhihi Yaya dvaravatim brahman Sarjuno yadubhivritaha. Translation, O Shaunaka, thereafter the Lord, having bade farewell to King Yudhishthira, Draupadi, and other relatives, started for the city of Dwaraka, accompanied by Arjuna and other members of the Yadu dynasty. Please repeat, O Shaunaka, thereafter the Lord, having bade farewell to King Yudhishthira, Draupadi, and other relatives, started for the city of Dwaraka, accompanied by Arjuna and other members of the Yadu dynasty. So we have our Mangalacharanam in this, the second yellow tab, I believe, in the blue book. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militangyena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtang Sthapitang Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kata Mahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Patakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tang Sajivam Sadvetam Sabatutang Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitangscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Shri Shri Navadvipa Parapradipa Sandipyamana Satato Bhuviha Chaitastamo Hanti Hiyasya Yatnatang Kirtayamak Prabhupada Devam Shri Bhakti Siddhanta Prachoditak Shri Vyasadya Kosham Kushalang Kripalahu Sanmletcha Vagdesha Chayeda Tadyas Tankirtayamak Prabhupada Devam Achadyate Yat Paratarka Drishya Govinda Murti Ujvala Bhaskarena Advaita Kadyota Kulang Jagatyang Tankirtayamak Prabhupada Devam Yasyaiva yatnena purana raja gangamala keshava keli hangsa Sattotra ratna vahiti haloke tankirta yamak prabhupada devam Shri Radhika Krishna padaravinde sahasra ritsu shatamandirishu Rupayajo mature prithivyang tankirtayama prabhupada devam Kaushalyadar yasya sahasra shastra shastrat parshay pratihanyatehi Chandakaler mohachamur hatena tankirtayama prabhupada devam Nana lasalgora sutha prakasha palakshitos tapita eva yena Krishnanu chinta janasangha brikshas tankirtayama prabhupada deva yo nityada jivati daivakishu nijasu shikshasu saksanga gami kripam budhir nandas tankirtayama prabhupada devam Nama om Vishnu padaya Krishna prishtaya bhutale Srimate bhakti siddhanta saraswati ti namine Shri Varshabhanavi Devi Daitaya Kripabdhaye Krishna Sambandha Vijnana Daine Prabhave Namaha Madhurya Ujvala Premadhyaya Shri Rupanuga Bhaktida Shri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Namostute Namaste Gauravani Shri Murtaye Dinatarine Rupanuga Virudhapa Siddhanta Tvanta Harine Namo Gaura Kishoraya Sakshad Vairagya Murtaye Vipralam Parasambhode Padambhujayate Namaha Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Satchidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Parayate Gaura Virbhava Bhumestvang Nirdeshta Satchana Priyaha Vaishnava Sarva Bhoma Shri Jagannathayate Namaha Bancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Mahabhadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaura Tvishe Namaha Pancha Tattvatmakam Krishnam Bhakta Rupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakyam Namami Bhakta Shaktikam He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Jayatang Suratau Pangor Mamamanda Matergati Matsarvasvapadam Bhojao Radha Madana Mohanao Divyad Vrindaranya Kalpadrumadhak Srimad Ratnagara Singhasanastau Srimad Radha Srila Govinda Devo Prishtali Bhiksevyamano Smarami Sriman Rasarasarambhi Vangshivata Tathakstitaha Karshan Venu Svanayar Gopir Gopinathak Shriyestunaha Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vrindaye Tulsi Deviye Priyaye Keshavashyacha Vishnu Bhakti Prajedevi Satyavatyaye Namo Namaha Shri Nishringha Jaya Nishringha Jaya Jaya Nishringha Prahladesha Jaya Padma Mukha Padma Bringa Matsamo Nasti Papatma Naparadhi Chakashchana Parihare Pilajame King Brube Purushottama Yuvati Nang Yata Yuni Yunang Cha Yuvatau Yata Mano Biramate Tadvan Mano Me Ramatang Twayi Pumaus Kaliti Padanam Pumire Babalambanam Twayi Jata Paradhanam Twameva Sharanam Prabho Govinda Valabhe Radhe Prarthaye Tramahang Sada Twadiyamiti Jana Tu Govindang Man Twayasaha Radhe Vrindavanadhi She Karunamrita Vahini Kripaya Nijapadabja Dasyang Mahang Pradiyatam Vande Nanda Vrajastrinang Padarenang Pabhikshnasaha Yashang Harikator Gitang Punati Bhuvanatrayam Nama Shrestang Manum Apisachi Putra Matra Surupam Shri Rupam Tasyagrajamurupura Maturingoshtavatim Radha Kundang Girivaram Mahuradhika Madhavasang Prabdo Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurung Tang Natosmi Adadana Stritang Dantaya Iram Dache Punak Punaha Srimad Rupa Patam Bhoja Rajohang Syama Pave Pave Hantayam Madrir Abala Haridasya Varyo Yadrama Krishna Charanas Parasha Pramodaha Manang Tanoti Sahago Ganayostayoryat Pani Asuya Basakandara Kandamulai Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Veta Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Lord Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead, being invited to the sacrifices by Maharaj Yudhishthir, saw to it that they were performed by qualified twice-born brahmanas. After that, for the pleasure of the relatives, the Lord remained for a few months. O Shonaka, thereafter the Lord, having bade farewell to King Yudhishthir, Draupadi, and other relatives, started for the city of Dwarka, accompanied by Arjuna and the other members of the Yadu dynasty. So in the, I have to go back and look, but what we've been doing in the chapters, it's not exactly chronological, it seems. And I wonder if it's that way for a reason. That is, the previous chapter was Krishna's entering into Dwarka, and now this chapter goes back to him in what's happening in Hastinapur. I don't know if he went back to Hastinapur or whether the Shonaka Rishi just backed up in time again to describe the birth of Emperor Parikshit, which took place in Hastinapur while Krishna was there. And then after he was born, and the summing up the chapter, the brahmanas foretold great qualities of Maharaj Parikshit to King Yudhishthir. Then he remunerated them. He was very happy to hear how wonderful his son was born, who was capable of being a saintly king for the whole earth and the empire of the Maharaj Yudhishthir. And then he remunerated the brahmanas who went back to their abodes. And then Maharaj Yudhishthir, feeling sorry for the deaths of so many warriors at the Battle of Kurukshetra, he felt it was on his account, because the result of the battle was to install him on the throne. He was willing to share the throne with his cousins, the sons of Dhritarashtra, headed by Duryodhana, or rather to have some separate kingdom. Even the last, because I do litigation, we always have these settlement discussions, you know, the last offer that he conveyed, actually Lord Krishna himself acted as his spokesman and conveyed the offer that they would accept just five villages, because they were five Pandavas and they had to do their duties. So their duty was to be administrators, to be kshatriyas, to see to the justice of their people and welfare of their people. So they asked for just five villages. But Duryodhana famously said, or infamously said, I won't give them as much land as you can put a pin into. He was that envious of them. He was always, because his cousins, the five Pandavas, were always superior to him in piety and good qualities. He always burned with envy and wanted to deprive them of their rightful position on the throne. He felt, why not take it for myself? After all, I'm the son of the oldest brother, Dhritarashtra, and it was only because my father was born blind, that he wasn't the king. And if he had been the king, then I would have inherited the crown. And so in this way, he made intrigues to block his brothers from inheriting the crown. And it led to, ultimately, the resolution in the Battle of Kurukshetra, where millions, literally millions of soldiers were killed. It was a world war that took place in a very short time, 18 days, where weapons were used that are unknown to modern warfare. Magical weapons were used, and they could kill a lot of soldiers at one time. So anyway, he was feeling responsible that this warfare had taken place, and he had achieved his kingdom as a result of such terrible slaughter. And he wanted to atone for this by performing sacrifice for the pleasure of the Personality of Godhead. Of course, the Personality of Godhead himself, Lord Krishna, was present as his cousin and had a special friendship with his family.
But Yudhishthira Maharaj also had a friendly family relationship with Lord Krishna, who was present on earth in his playing his pastimes as Krishna, and also he performed the sacrifices for the pleasure of Vishnu, the personality of Godhead, who was more remote and unfamiliar to him, and who was revered with great awe and is the enjoyer of sacrifices. So he performed the sacrifices correctly according to Vedic rituals, and in this verse we see that he entrusted Krishna, his younger cousin, with the duty to make sure that the rituals were performed correctly by qualified brahmanas. And Lord Krishna is known as Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha. So he always wishes for the welfare of the cows and the brahmanas. He's the lord of the brahmanas. Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha Jagad Hitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. So he's also the support of the whole universe, like that. Jagat Hitaya. What does Hitaya mean? Tita? So he's the, I think he's the maintainer of the universe. Dhatu means root, but Tita, I forget. It's probably in here. Let's look it up. Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha. Namo Brahmanya Devaya, page 381. Benefiting the whole world. So it's the same word, Hitaya, Jagad Hitaya. Because of Sandhi, after the word Jagat, then the word Hitaya becomes Hitaya. So Jagat Hitaya, to one who is always benefiting the whole world. And Go Brahmana Hitaya, beneficial to the cows and brahmanas. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto Lord Krishna, who is the worshipable deity for all brahminical men, who is the well-wisher of cows and brahmanas, and who is always benefiting the whole world. I offer my respectful obeisances to the personality of Godhead known as Krishna and Govinda. It's quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's from the Vishnu Purana, First Canto, 19th chapter, verse 65. So these sacrifices in those days, these sacrifices were performed. We're hearing frequently about these sacrifices now, that in these days the Vedic sacrifices on that scale cannot be performed. We could see that it required so much wealth that we've been reading, that in order to get properly remunerate the brahmanas and get all the proper utensils and ingredients for the sacrifice, the king had to go and get the gold that had been left by King Maruta. So his brothers went, understanding his purpose, and they went and collected that gold, which was available. Let's see. The name of the king was Maruta. And with all that wealth, he was able to perform this wonderful sacrifice. Three horse sacrifices, and also not just wealth was required, but qualified brahmanas was required. To actually perform the sacrifice, it has to be consummated, that is, it has to be, the ingredients of the sacrifice has to actually be consumed by Vishnu, and the prasadam has to be distributed, so it has to be done correctly so that it will actually have the effect to please Vishnu. And in order to do that, it has to be done by learned brahmanas who actually not only have learning but realization and purity of heart and are able to perform the sacrifice correctly. Just purity of heart is not even enough, actually, for this kind of sacrifice. One has to know how to pronounce all the mantras correctly and be duly initiated. But certainly just knowing the mantras is not enough. One has to have the qualities of purity and realization. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna describes the qualities by which the brahmanas in society, that is the intellectual priestly class of people, the leaders, the spiritual leaders of society, have to work according to these qualities. And he says, Samo dhamma tapak shocham kshantir arjavam evacha jnana vijnanam astakyam brahmakarma svabhavacham. So they have to be equipoised. Let's, that would be verse 18. Let's see. I'll find it in this book. It's got to be in here. 18. Oh, I skipped it. Okay, here it is. 1842 on page 144. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, knowledge, wisdom, and religiousness. These are the natural qualities by which the brahmanas work. And the next verse in the Bhagavad Gita says, heroism, power, determination, resourcefulness, courage in battle, generosity, and leadership are the natural qualities of work for the kshatriyas. So the human society has to work in a certain way so that everything, there's a place for everything and everything has its place. It can't be that everyone works in the same way. There's division of labor and there's gradations of the divisions. And this is true in every society. So the rules of Varnashram Dharma have both a prescriptive and also a descriptive aspect. That is, they're describing what's going on, that people are fulfilling certain functions. And they're also prescribing that those who fulfill those functions have to have the qualities for fulfilling those functions correctly. And there's four main divisions of degraded labor in human society. There has to be the intellectuals who are the leaders. They have the vision. They see things. Then there has to be the administrators. They're the arms of the body. Just like the intellectuals are the head of the body, the administrators are the arms of the body. They do things and they establish, you know, justice, the welfare of all the citizens, the government. They do the government. And they make sure that everyone has an opportunity to do his duty so that everyone can fulfill their role in the world. It's not capitalism. It's not just about whoever can make the most money. There was one short story by a Southern woman writer, Ellen Gilchrist, I think. And I remember just reading one short story where she was describing some people in Louisiana, New Orleans or something, and the father of the family used to say, money is what you keep score with. You know, in other words, you're a successful person in life according to how much money you've earned. But of course, that's not correct. That you know, money is necessary. You can't do without it. But it comes from performing your duty properly. You have to know what your duty is and discharge that duty. In our modern society, the children are educated and they get some kind of career guidance, counseling at some point in their lives, and they're encouraged to do something as their occupation so that they can fulfill their role properly in society. And they have all these books to try to help you find, you know, what color is your parachute, and you know, try to help you find what kind of thing you want to do as your occupation. And they tell you to do something that you really like, and then you will be able to make money with it. But if you just try to do what makes you the most money, you might find that you don't necessarily like it. But according to the Vedic system, the children were selected for training properly in their youth. And in general, in the traditional Vedic system, the parents, even before the child was born, would perform samskaras to get the right kind of child. And especially in the Brahmin families, they had to perform the Garbhadhan Samskara so that their children would be pure with these pure qualities to be able to fulfill the duties, these qualities that are described, peacefulness, tolerance, honesty, knowledge, and so on, so that they would be born with the body, the prarabdha karma. They would attract a soul that already had that destiny to have that kind of body, to be born with the subtle body and the gross body with the right kind of qualities to be able to become the visionary spiritual leaders of society and teach the Vedas and teach everyone else their duty. And those brahmanas then, in that way, could advise the government leaders and also the vaishyas, who are the productive class. They're compared to the stomach of the body. They have to produce the food. They have to tend to the herds and to produce milk. And so they care for cows. And they can also engage in trade and so forth. It's not the society being described is not an overly industrial, heavy society. There's industry. The manufactured goods have to be made. But the primary sector, the agricultural sector, is the main occupation. You know, the modern social scientists talk about the primary sector is producing food, basically the farms, and the secondary sector is the manufacturing, you know, manufactured goods. So everyone can have an iPod or whatever they, you know, a car, and the smokestack industries and so forth. And then the other class of people, they give service to others. So they're the tertiary sector of society, basically. They may be working within the industrial or farming situation, but they're the service industries. You know, would you like me to supersize that? So that includes includes artists, craftsmen, musicians, and so forth. So anyway, society goes on with these different divisions. Any society is going on with these different divisions, and it's all being conducted by the modes of material nature. And everything is working. The universe is like a giant clock or a machine that all works properly, and all the parts have to do their functions. And one of the meanings of Dharma is one's essential function, you know, what one's duty is. So it's not that you do it to get something, but it's you do it because that's your proper duty. And you have a role. There's a place for everything and everything in its place. You have to find your own place by being guided by learned brahmanas who can perceive your psychophysical nature, what you'll be good at, and so forth. And in the ancient system, generally, you know, the son of the farmer would become the farmer later, and the son of the priest would become the priest later, and the son of the king would become the king. And there are practical reasons for that too. You don't have to have elections every 4 years or every 8 years or 6 years or whatever, and you don't have to have a struggle for you know, I want to be the king. No, I want to be the king. I can poison him or kill him, and then I become the emperor and stuff like they had in the Roman Empire and stuff. But if you have the understanding that only the proper heir can be elected to the throne, then the power can transfer smoothly. The whole system works if the proper heir is qualified with these qualities, like Yudhishthira Maharaj was duly qualified, and in this chapter we were hearing about Parikshit Maharaj would be qualified. Heroism, power, determination, resourcefulness, courage in battle, generosity, and leadership. Those are the natural qualities of work for the government leader, you know, the kshatriyas, the royal order, and the policemen, the soldiers. They have a special character. A policeman has to be able to give a command, you know, and get command obedience and get people to obey him. Whereas a brahmana has to be able to explain the absolute truth and can't be too passionate. Has to be. So the brahminical qualities are expected to be in the influenced by the mode of goodness. Did you have a comment? Okay. I thought I saw your hand. So the mode of goodness is the character of the brahmanas, and this is the most beneficial for all society. And Kshatriya is considered emblematic of the mode of passion. The Vaishyas are considered mixed mode of ignorance and passion. And the Shudras have more of a mixture of the mode of ignorance and less of the passion. So, of course, pure devotional service takes place on the Brahma-Bhuta platform from not just any Brahmana, but a completely fully qualified Brahmana. And the pure devotee can engage in any occupation according to any of these positions in society. But according to the system for just the practical system for regulating the social relations, it was traditional that those born in Brahmana families would then be qualified, that they would first have to have the qualities, and then they would have to, through training and education, become fully qualified and realized and able to actually perform the sacrifices and perform the function of Brahmanas correctly in society. And if they were simply born in the family of a Brahmana, but they didn't have the qualities, nor did they get the training or the education and the realization to be able to work with those qualities, then they couldn't actually perform the function. They wouldn't be able to lead the sacrifice in such a way that it would be successful, and the fruit of the sacrifice wouldn't actually be achieved. So it's very necessary, Hare Krishna, it's very necessary under that kind of sacrifice that all of the performers of the sacrifice, including the different kinds of priests and so forth, did their duties exactly accurately. They had to pronounce everything exactly accurately. They had to perform the ritual correctly. And they had to not only do the ritual, but they had to understand the meaning of the ritual so that they could do it well. You can tell when somebody's just doing something by rote as opposed to someone who's become a master in any kind of field. So they have to be properly trained. To be a qualified Brahmana is not an easy or ordinary thing. In the age of Kali we're living in now, the real qualified Brahmanas are scarce. And it's not supposed to be just a social system for artificial domination by one family or one caste over another. It's the actual Varnashram system is supposed to be a pure, holy, pious, natural way that society is organized so that everybody lives in harmony properly together and fulfills their function while making spiritual advancement, being guided by intelligent, realized brahmanas and being administered by saintly kshatriyas who take the advice of the intelligent brahmanas, the rajarshis. The word is called rajarshi. This philosophy also is reminiscent, for those of you who studied philosophy in Western philosophy classes, of Plato's description of the in the Republic of the social body. There's a head, arms, legs, and a stomach. That's also there in the Vedas. You'll find a lot of things are there in Vedic culture and Greek culture because they weren't that far away from each other. It's just that Greek culture was a little more materialistic. And in fact, the Greeks... Alexander the Great came and conquered a part of probably now what's now Pakistan, but which was then under this huge empire that occupied most of the Indian subcontinent, the Mauryan Empire, and Chandragupta Maurya was the emperor, and he made a peace treaty with Alexander, and said Alexander left some Greek generals behind, and there was a Hellenistic period in Indian architecture and art and sculpture and so forth. And one of those kings that was left behind in about 150 or 200 BC left the famous Heliodorus column where he declared himself to be a follower of the Bhagavat tradition, which is what we're following here, the Srimad Bhagavatam. The tradition of devotional service to the Bhagavan Sri Krishna. So this is predates Christianity, but it was prominent within the Greek and Roman, this was the Hellenistic part of what became the Roman Empire shortly thereafter. The Roman Empire extended into the Palestine area now, that's now Israel and Palestine, and so forth. There were trade routes, the Silk Road. You know, there were people going from there. And if you just hop in a boat in Arabia and cross the Arabian Sea, you'll be in Gujarat. But if you just put a sail up, and it'll just take you there. You know, it's a short journey. It's not like going across the Atlantic Ocean or something. So they were going. Ovid, the Roman poet, wrote about his travels in India. And in India, you'll find in archaeological sites, you'll find many Roman and Greek coins. There was trade going on there, at least at that time, 2,000 years ago. But now we're going back to 5,000 years ago, before these Greeks and Romans, at least before the Latins had taken over the and become prominent on the Italian peninsula and so forth. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master, he established the tradition of giving Pancharatrika Brahmana initiation to people born outside of the Brahmin families. And this caused quite a stir among many people who were anxious to hold on to the privilege of being Brahmanas, but who really weren't qualified Brahmanas. And in fact, this Srila Prabhupada is alluding to that here, that if they're not qualified and if they're not really twice born, then, as Srila Prabhupada says, they're born as Shudras. In this age, everyone is basically born as Shudras, Kalo Shudra Sambhava, which is not to demean anyone. But, oh, what a beautiful garland. Thank you very much. To be a Shudra is also very nice. One can serve, give service. Actually, the natural position of all living entities is to give service. We're servants of Krishna. But the once-born scions of Brahmana families are equal with the once-born Shudras, and such Brahmabandhus or unqualified once-born scions must be rejected for any purpose of religious or Vedic function. So if they're not actually properly trained and educated and don't have the qualities and don't get the abilities, then they're not allowed to perform these Vedic functions. And so we can see here that Krishna was given charge by Maharaj Yudhishthir. They were from the Kshatriya order. Of course, Krishna is not a Kshatriya or a Brahmin or anything, but he is the creator of the whole system and the creator of the whole universe. But he's playing the role of a Kshatriya king. And under the direction of Maharaj Yudhishthir, he is seeing to it that the twice-born qualified Brahmanas, who he's very fond of, Krishna is very fond of Brahminical culture, and he's very fond of the Brahmanas. And he saw to it that qualified Brahmanas were there to perform the sacrifice, which was carried out very successfully. And just as Krishna is playing the role of a Kshatriya, so a qualified pure Vaishnava is also just playing a role of whatever role he is in society. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, to establish this principle, he showed that if there were pure Vaishnavas who are therefore capable, if they're really pure Vaishnavas, they should be automatically capable of, they should be twice born already and capable of fulfilling the role of Brahmanas, that Brahmanas fulfill in society. So he was saying that they can be trained. They can be given the proper training. If they're pure Vaishnavas, they have the qualities to be given the proper training to fulfill those duties and accomplish those duties, those important functions in society as Brahmanas. And it doesn't matter what family they were born into, notwithstanding some Smriti Shastras that might say otherwise. Because in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, guna karma vibhagasaha. By qualities and work, the different castes are distinguished. He doesn't say janma, not by the birth. So Bhaktisiddhanta introduced this idea, or introduced this practice, that If someone would become purified by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, and they would become pure enough by quality to then be trained as a brahmana, and then to work as a brahmana. Of course, a brahmana doesn't usually make much money. It's not an occupation to, if you go to your career guidance counselor at your college, and they say, what would you like to do? Would you like to be a kshatriya, a vaishya, or a brahmana? That's how they should say. Not necessarily what you'd like, but what are you qualified for? But a brahmana is supposed to work and exist on the charity of other people. A brahmana is supposed to be so dedicated to just the truth that if they get money, they will spend it in sacrifice and distribute prasadam. They're not interested in accumulating money unnecessarily. Someone who accumulates money unnecessarily is called a miser. They have these television shows now, reality television shows about people who hoard things. They can't give anything up, and their houses just get full. They can't even walk around their house. Their houses are just full of stuff that they won't throw away and things like that. So one who has this mentality of just trying to accumulate and becoming the wealthiest person can't be a brahmana. A brahmana's mentality must be to always be dedicated to the truth and to be dedicated to speaking the truth and understanding the absolute truth and helping everyone according to their own position, how to do things. These sacrifices that were performed in the olden days can't be performed today, but there is a great quality in this age that we can perform the Sankirtan sacrifice by just chanting Hare Krishna. And that's the great sacrifice, and it brings all of the benefits of the other sacrifices and more. The real benefit is love, bhakti. Krishna teaches in the Bhagavad Gita that one should perform one's duty not in order to achieve the fruits of the duty, the phal, karma phal, that by performing things in order to get what you achieve by the performance of those duties and enjoy them is what continues your bondage under karma, karma bandhana. It continues your being bound to your destiny based on the kind of fruits of your work, which are good and bad also. They're not all good. So you have some good fruits, but you have some bad fruits also. No matter how good you try to make the work, you try to be so good, as they say, but always something will slip in. Just like in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's the story of one king named King Nriga, and he was performing so much charity, which is very pious work, and he was giving unlimited cows to brahmanas, to qualified brahmanas. It said, where was I just reading? In the fourth canto, I think, or no, it's maybe in the Bhagavad Gita purport. Srila Prabhupada was saying there's a verse that says that if you give charity to an unqualified person, you get it back later in your next life or something. If you give charity to a half-learned brahmana who's not really qualified, you get it back like double or something. And if you give it to a qualified brahmana, then you get it back, you know, hundreds and thousands of times. But if you give it to someone who's really a topmost devotee, I forget the word, para, veda para, something like that, veda paraga, then you get it back unlimited times. And Srila Prabhupada was illustrating this. How can you get something back unlimited times? You have to actually go to the spiritual world. So it's possible to go to the spiritual world through this process of charity. But it's very difficult because this is karma, this is material work that you're giving away cows in charity. This king was very wealthy and he was giving away all these cows, but it so happened that one of the cows, he had given 10,000 cows to one brahmana, not just ordinary cows, but they all had just had one calf, you know, just given their first calf so that they were all ideal milkers, and they were decorated with gold-plated horns and silver-plated hoofs, and they all had garlands on, and they were very nicely, nice blankets on their backs, and they were nicely being given in this way. And he gave 10,000 to one brahmana, and one of the cows somehow snuck away from the herd and got back among the cows that he was still giving, and he gave the same cow to another brahmana. And the brahmanas could perceive that. One brahmana said, you've got my cow. I was given that cow, and now you're taking it with him. He said, well, I was given that cow. I'm supposed to take it. I was told that it was the cow for me to take. So then the king was told, look, you gave the same cow to two different people. You can't give something and take it back and give it to somebody else. Once you gave it, it was gone. It wasn't yours to give. And so the king asked, please forgive me. Let me give the other. It was my mistake. It really belongs to the one I gave the first two. I shouldn't have given it to the second one. I'll give you a different cow. No, I want this cow. Well, I'll give you 10,000 more additional other cows instead of that cow. No, I want the cow you gave me. Might not make much sense why the brahmana was saying that, but he was, the principle of what counts. He wasn't interested in the wealth. He was interested in the principle. So in this way, even though King Nriga tried to do everything perfectly, and he did so much, some mistake occurred, and some mistake will inevitably occur. But the process of devotional service is so nice that it acts very powerfully. This process of chanting Hare Krishna is so nice that it acts very powerfully, and it's not dependent on these, like the process of karma is dependent. If you make a little mistake, you have to suffer. So, for example, King Nriga, he had to suffer as he had to take his birth as a big, very large lizard in a well. It was his last birth in the material world, but he had to take this birth as a lizard in a well in Dwarka, where the children of Krishna and grandchildren of Krishna were playing and found him and brought Krishna there to take him out. And then Krishna touched him with his lotus feet, and he became a resident of Vaikuntha, showed his beautiful form. So the path of karma is fraught with very much difficulties, and there's always a danger that one may not succeed. And of course, the karma itself is just material. It produces something material. But karma yoga, that is, Krishna actually encourages in the Bhagavad Gita that we should perform our duties. It's better even to perform our duties than to try to renounce our duties. Performance of duty for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is better than simply renouncing duties. Both, he says, both are beneficial for spiritual advancement, to be able to properly renounce thinking, what do I have to do with this world? What do I have to do with this family, this work, these things? I'm really Brahman. One may properly renounce one's duties and become a sannyasi. But Krishna says better than karma sannyas is karma yoga. And he says the one who actually achieves the results, perfection in one of the two paths, actually gets the results of both paths. And that those who are learned, they see that they're really one path combined. That by performing devotional service, what one renounces is the mentality of being the controller, the enjoyer. One can go on doing one's different duties. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna, he was finding that the duty he had, which was going to be the hero of the battle and kill so many people on the other side, many of whom were his relatives, many of whom were his benefactors, his guru, his grandfather, people with whom he had a great great respect and a great relationship. And he was finding this was a very faulty duty at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. He was saying, I don't want to do this. Wouldn't it be better? He was thinking like trying to act like a brahmana. Wouldn't it be better to renounce my duty and live in the forest by begging, or just let the other side kill me? Wouldn't this be better? And Krishna said, you're speaking as if you were a learned person, but you're speaking without basic understanding, basic understanding of what is the difference between the soul and the body. And as Krishna's instructions went on, he said, you should do your own duty, but you should do it with the proper consciousness, that is the consciousness of doing it as a sacrifice for Vishnu. And eventually Krishna revealed himself, that he himself is really Vishnu, and that Arjuna should surrender to him and do everything he wanted, and not do it because of what social results it would have, or what, you know, or all these different calculations Arjuna was making, but ultimately just do it to please Krishna. And the real Varnashram system is meant to please Krishna. Chaturvarnyam maya shrishtam guna karma vibhagasa. And he says, even though I created the system, I don't do anything. He's explaining to Arjuna about action and reaction and inaction. And he's saying that I, as God, I'm transcendental. So I don't actually have any duty that I have to perform. And I'm not bound by the actions that I do. And nevertheless, I'm acting. You know, I'm coming here. I'm also driving your chariot. I'm also, you know, marrying 16,000 the different wives that he's marrying, and taking care of each of them as his husband. Yes, please. Microphone, please.
Could you talk a little bit more about the soul and the body? Because like, how can you integrate that? Because your body or your human form may, you know, want something else, but then your soul, you know, maybe wants to follow its purpose. And then, so how do you integrate that so that you're not constantly, like, fighting with yourself? Or
yes. So Krishna says you have to regulate. He says that you actually have to, your body, it's true, your material body, your senses, are grouped around your mind. Your mind is also part of your external covering. The soul is not the mind either. It's not the body, the hands, the feet, the eyes, the smell and taste and hearing. The senses, those senses that you have with your gross body that is made of fire, water, air, earth, and ether. But in addition to that, there's other material coverings. They're also inert. They're material things. They can't be perceived. So in our Western civilization, we think that the things that we can actually perceive with our senses are material, and the things we can't perceive, like thoughts and, you know, historical, the ideas of things that happened in the past, or wisdom, you know, the idea of knowing right from wrong and those kind of things. We know they exist. I mean, we have to deal with them. As a lawyer, I have to deal with, like, sometimes certain kinds of civil wrongs or criminal, and all kinds of criminal wrongs have an element of what's called scienter. They have to have the guilty mind. Like, if you commit fraud, the person who's saying that someone committed fraud has to prove that the defendant actually didn't just say something wrong, but actually intended to, he had the intent to cause the other person to rely on that. So anyway, what I'm saying is we know these things exist. We know thoughts exist. We know intentions exist. We know knowledge of right and wrong exists, all those kind of things. Those are also material things. They're not part of the soul, but it's all covering the soul. And so you're right. We're kind of stuck in the body, right? Our body tells us to do things. Arjuna says, even an intelligent person who's striving to avoid committing wrong, they, as if by force, they commit wrong again and again. Why is that, Krishna? And Krishna says it's because of lust, kama, desire. And that desire is seated in different places. It's captured different strongholds within the gross and subtle body, the senses, the mind, and the intelligence, which are part of the coverings of the living entity. And because of that, it covers the knowledge, the real knowledge of the soul. and makes him think that his best interest lies again in he forgets his best interest lies in avoiding wrong action, and temporarily he becomes confused and bewildered. His memory is lost, and he engages in wrong action again. So Krishna says that by regulation, from the very beginning, by learning to act properly according to your nature and do the duties and functions according to your position in society, just like the impulses there, the sex impulses there, young boys and young girls, they're attracted to each other, and that attraction is going on. So in society, there are rules and regulations for that, that there's marriage, sacred marriage, and a young boy and a young girl should be married, and that impulse can be used for them to actually raise a family and within the bonds of marriage to properly serve each other and care for each other in a proper way. But if it's not used, if it's misused, and they become promiscuous or they commit adultery or so forth, then society is ruined, and also their future is ruined, their future lives are ruined by that impious activity, illicit sex. And their hopes for spiritual advancement will also be ruined. The whole Vedic system really is set up in such a way to kind of minimize this sexual impulse and challenge it towards something productive and useful, rather than make it the center. The whole sort of, in our Western civilization, all the advertising, everything is set up toward making money. So they want to convince you to buy everything, and then they convince you that this will increase your sex pleasure somehow. And then people are encouraged for many generations, at least, you know, before my father's generation, my grandfather's generation, at least, you know, in the 1920s, people had cars, and the boys and girls could go out and get out of the purview of the parents, the chaperones, and when boys and girls are mixing together, young men and women outside of the supervision of the grown-ups, the elders, there's going to be hanky-panky. They're going to be up to no good. And so this is, you know, this whole social breakdown has occurred after World War I, at least. But even before that, it's Kali Yuga. It was breaking down. But anyway, I'm sorry, I don't know if I answered your question, but Krishna says two things. He says, by regulation, from the very beginning, you follow the rules and you train yourself that, you know, even though I'm not this body, I have this body to work with, and it has a certain nature, so I have to do the duties that are according to the nature. And he says the second thing is you have to have knowledge. You have to realize that, you know, the senses are actually superior to just the dull matter. And superior to the senses is the mind, the function of the mind. What he's talking about, the mind, the psychology, they have different divisions like manas and buddhi. So in Western culture, we talk about everything that's not the gross body is the mind, you know, the psyche or whatever. But actually within the Sankhya philosophy, there's a distinction between there's an analytical distinction between different parts of the psyche. So the mind is the center, the senses in it, and its function is sankalpa, vikalpa. It's accepting and rejecting things that are presented by the senses. I'd like to go get an ice cream now. No, I'd really rather go watch television or whatever. And the mind is saying, okay, we'll do this. Okay, we'll do that. So it's like the reins. There's a picture in the Bhagavad Gita of five horses, the five senses, and then the reins are like the mind. But then there is a driver that's holding on to the reins. That is the intelligence. And the intelligence has to be able to say, you know, you have to do what's your proper duty. You have to do it according to regulation. So Krishna says the intelligence is higher than the mind. And then the soul is higher than the intelligence. So Krishna says that by spiritual strength, knowing the soul to be higher than the mind, intelligence, and senses, has to conquer lust by this process of regulation and spiritual knowledge. So you have to perform your duties according to the regulations for those duties, like no sex outside of marriage. And that's one of the regulations. You have to perform that. And then also you have to have knowledge. You may perform some sacrifice, you know, go to the temple and bring some rice or something and give it to the temple. So you're performing some sacrifice. You know it's going to be offered by the priests to Krishna. But if you perform it with real knowledge of how you're not the body, you're really servant of Krishna, and how this is part of your, this is your actual duty, then Krishna says that sacrifice performed in knowledge is superior to just the sacrifice of the of material possessions. So, and then ultimately Krishna leads to the process of dhyana or meditation is there, where in the sixth chapter, where one who is accomplished in yoga and has come to a high stage of yoga rudha can actually then start to, you know, cease material activities and concentrate the mind perfectly. But that kind of meditation where you go off, Krishna is recommending, or he's not really recommending, but he's describing the system of Raja Yoga, where you go off and live in a secluded place as a sannyasi and eat only, you know, leaves and roots and berries that fall from the trees and things like that, and you spend all day sitting there concentrating the mind on the super soul. That's also not very practical in this age, but the same result can be achieved in this age by chanting Hare Krishna 16 rounds a day and doing devotional service, and actually better result can be achieved. At the end of that chapter, Krishna says that the greatest yogi is the one who is constantly devoted to me, worshipping me, surrendered to me. You know, yoginam api sarvesham madgatena antaratmana shradhavan bhajate, with great faith in me, is worshipping me. Samayuktatamo, in my opinion, he's the most intimately united with me in yoga and is the greatest of all. So I don't know if I've answered your question, but it's, there's, Srila Prabhupada described that there's different kinds of yogas. And then, Krishna's describing in Bhagavad Gita, Jnana Yoga, Karma Yoga, you know, Raja Yoga or Dhyan under the Raja Yoga system and so forth. But they culminate in Bhakti Yoga. They culminate in this yoga where Krishna says, if you offer me with love and affection a fruit, a flower, a water, a leaf, with love and effect, with bhakti, with devotional service, if you offer me with that devotion, then I'll accept that. He says, I'm equal to everyone. I'm as God, I'm neutral. I don't particularly care for one person or not care for someone else. In this world, we're thinking of everything in terms of good and bad, friends and enemies, you know, whatever's good for my body and my clan and my, you know, my tribe or my nation or whatever. We're thinking, oh, we're the good guys, and we're always, and politics is in everything, even my political party within the same country. You know, you watch the Fox News and you watch the MSNBC news, and they have a different slant on who the good guys and who the bad guys are. But Krishna says, nobody's the good guys or the bad guys. Everybody, you know, I'm the Lord of everyone. But he says, those who actually are devoted to me and approach me with love and want to develop their relationship with me in love, then I develop that relationship with them. I accept their offerings. I become visible to them. In fact, I'm never lost to them, and they never forget me. And they're always seeing me in their heart of hearts with the eye of devotion tinged with the salve of love, as we were reading earlier in the Brahma Samhita. So that devotional service is the highest goal of all the yogas. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is describing these different yogas in the context of how they are related to achieving the real goal, which is that devotional service. That's the ultimate goal. The goal is not to become one with the impersonal aspect of the Absolute Truth. That's only the preliminary stage before one has to come to that Brahma-Bhuta, that equipoised stage beyond hankering and lamenting, in order from that stage, then the actual active life of devotion actually begins. Did you have a... No, I thought... Okay. So, we have to deal with... We're not these bodies, but we think we're these bodies. We have to overcome that thought. And chanting Hare Krishna is very strong. It's very powerful because it's the natural, actually, it's the eternal occupation of the soul proper. And when we chant Hare Krishna, especially like in the association of devotees, we see the deities of Krishna, we do service to Krishna. This actually is a very powerful medicine. It dissolves the material subtle body, which makes us, you know, which always forces us to try to enjoy matter, which we've been doing for so long. We have to get rid of that attitude. We have to get rid of that mentality. But it's occupied places in our psyche deep down. It's in our senses. It's in our mind. It's in our intelligence. And it has to be purified. It has to be eradicated. And the brahmanas, the qualified brahmanas who can do the real sacrifice, they've become very pure from all that. And so by chanting Hare Krishna for us in this age, by chanting Hare Krishna, and our system is that when one becomes a serious devotee and one is able to follow the rules and regulations and chant Hare Krishna every day, then after some time the spiritual master will give initiation that you can chant Hare Krishna 16 rounds a day. You must vow to avoid illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating. So this is a little bit of regulation. You know, you can't go drink wine anymore if that's what you used to do, or smoke marijuana, or even smoke cigarettes, or drink coffee. And you must be strict vegetarian. In fact, you should offer everything you eat to Krishna and only eat the prasadam. So you cook nice vegetarian food that doesn't have garlic or onion or mushrooms. It can have milk products. And you offer with love and devotion to Krishna. And you make that your habit, that you don't... is it getting too late? Or what time is the...
10 o'clock is the Guru Puja time.
Okay. So this system, and then after doing that for some time, then when the spiritual master agrees that you've become steady at that and you're successful and qualified at that, then you can then is offered the initiation into the Gayatri Mantra, and that you chant these additional Gayatri Mantras three times a day, and you have very clean habits, and then you learn to practice the rituals of worshipping the deity on the altar, cooking for the deities in the temple, and you know, becoming a member of the clergy, so to speak, the priestly class of brahmanas. And that's offered to people regardless, in this Hare Krishna movement, that's offered to people regardless of their birth. It's offered on the basis of their qualification. Are there any other questions or comments before we go to the Guru Puja? What's your name? Reina? Is this your first time here, or... Yeah, please. We're broadcasting.
Oh, this is my first time here on a Saturday. I came one early morning during the weekday for the worship.
Oh, okay. Well, we're very happy that you've come, and you're very welcome. We're going to have a Guru Puja now, and then afterwards we'll have a prasadam meal. And we hope you can come often. We also have Wednesday evening programs and Sunday evening programs. And then there are special holiday programs, too. If you can get signed up on our mailing list, we'll get you. Ramananda Sakka will make sure that you get signed up, or Shraddha, who is sitting here. And we're coming to this festival time of year now. We just had the big Bhaktivinoda Thakur festival, and now we're going to have the Rath Yatra festivals. There's going to be one big one in Los Angeles on July 31st, I think. And then, if I'm not mistaken with the dates, then the following weekend we'll have it in Golden Gate Park in San Francisco, a big festival with Lord Jagannath in his carts. And then, do you have japa beads, and have you learned to chant the japa? Okay, we'll teach you to do that today. You can practice that. It's a kind of meditation that it's free. You know, you don't have to. You can come and get free meditation lessons whenever you want here, and talk to other people, the other devotees, how they're doing this japa. And we don't sell it, and we don't. And it really just requires that you concentrate and that you listen as you chant to yourself the Hare Krishna mantra, and then, like I said, we'll have the Rath Yatra festival, and then after that will come the Krishna's birthday festival, and then we'll, the day after that is Srila Prabhupada's appearance festival, and then a little while later, in the fall, we'll have the Govardhan festival. So we have a lot of nice festivals coming up, and the Rath Yatra, they pull these big carts with ropes in a big parade through Golden Gate Park, or if you can go to Los Angeles, it's even larger down there, and it's down along the beach from Santa Monica Civic Center. They go along Venice Beach, and then they have a big festival site set up with all kinds of different cultural activities going on. It's very nice. So, Reina, very nice to welcome to have you here, and I hope you keep coming back. I know it's a lot of the Sanskrit chanting. If you know, it may. How do you feel about all the chanting? Is it too much? Too many hymns and things?
No, it's fine. I'm just open and I'm receiving it. And then I think the more that I do this, and you know, I'll read more into and really understand what it is I am chanting.
Yeah, the reading is important. Have you got the books? Have you got Bhagavad Gita? And
yes, I have the Bhagavad Gita, and then there are three smaller books that were given to me from here.
And I always like to get people to get the Krishna book, because that's the stories of Krishna. The Bhagavad Gita, you know, is explaining the philosophy where Krishna, you know, has a conversation with Arjuna and he explains everything about bhakti yoga. But the Krishna book is from the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a summary study of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where all Krishna's pastimes are described. So it's like the biography of Krishna, from what he did from the time he was born, or appeared to be born, because he's unborn, and his relationships with all the devotees and the different demons he killed and things. And the philosophy is also included in the Krishna book. So as you read it, you'll understand that it's not just the pastimes, but it's explaining how it is that he can be the absolute truth, the sum total of everything, the creator of the material world, and creator of all, the origin of all souls and the reservoir of all pleasure, and yet at the same time, he asserts himself as the friend, the dear, most well-wishing friend, especially of the devotees, although he's neutral to everyone. And all that, when you read the Krishna book, because Srila Prabhupada is able to describe it with full realization, it really comes alive, the life of this transcendental world where Krishna interacts with his devotees that way comes alive. So we'll stop there, unless there's anything else. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. Hare Krishna.